Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The VN Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-hosts...
Ismer Stinger.
Arthur.
Sponsored mention brought to you by Imagine's bank account.
No, maybe, no. Well, maybe once I get it over to YouTube.
Welcome to number 169. Today your hosts are Dan Q.
Absolute statements are absolutely problematic.
Mad Jen.
Tautology breaker.
The Mian Team.
My empire is large and I'm mostly in charge.
Monthar.
I'm back!
And I'm Ismer Stinger, and I have nothing clever to say.
That's alright. When you're introducing, you don't have to. It's one of those unwritten things.
Yeah, you don't have to, you know, think about what you're doing. It's okay. No one else does.
Yeah. The relaunch of the Firaxis website, www.firaxis.com. Yeah, it's back up, and you can see much of the information we've already discussed on this episode about Brave New World available on the site, along with their other games. So it's there if you're interested in it.
It was long overdue. The old site was kind of a relic of the 90s.
Well, and I think they were also saying, guess what's coming out soon, Gods and Kings? Really? Maybe. I don't know what's with the press release section having nothing there. Like on a redesign, it's kind of like coming soon. It's kind of like on the official Civilization V website and podcast for Gods and Kings, it still says coming soon, and we're getting close to a year. Can you please remove that or put some content there? Please, K, thanks.
Well, they have community links now. They link to the 2K forums, Civ Fanatics, Apolliton, We Play Civ, even some Academy, apparently. XCOM stuff.
More prominent links, because they were there on the previous design, but it was buried on, you had to go several layers into the site. So that, yeah, that is nice to see. That's much more prominent now.
Oh, if you look at the dev blog, in Monday, March 11th, 2013, so this has to be relatively recent. The site administrator apparently is a really good procedural train generator, so you can read up on how they did the train.
That's pretty pictures.
So there's a new patch for Gods and Kings. About a week ago, it was very tiny, very straightforward, very simple stuff like bug fixings, building defensive structures in your cities, then save and reload, the hit point bonus would disappear, you know, little things that don't really matter, except for the Hun Battering Ram promotion, which allows it to only attack cities, is now lost upon upgrade. That was kind of annoying when it was sticking around. In theory, they may have fixed the issue where the Rock of Gibraltar finally shows up correctly, and that's been around for a very, very long time. So maybe they're finally getting to the bottom of the bug list, if they're fixing that. Fixed a bug where the Mayan AI cheated its arse off and didn't have to pick a different great person for each Factoon. If you ever wanted to know if the AI was cheating, there you go. It was cheating.
Well, more than usual if it was the Mayan.
Yes.
Oh, they probably had that in on purpose for the AI.
No. That would not have happened.
I think I ran into that without realizing it. I once captured their capital, and it had six of the, what are they called, the tourist attractions, the great artist things.
Landmarks?
Landmarks, yes, that's what they're called. I never make them. I always just go for a gold name.
Well, it's how the Mayans somehow go from having no religion to insta-boom religion and enhanced religion within a few seconds. Yeah, they were probably just going, hey, look, it's a free great prophet. Yeah, I'll take that. Hey, look, it's another free great prophet. Sure, why not? I'll enhance my religion. They were cheating. Apparently fixed an issue on city taking gifting, which would cause a loss of the city's plots forever. So I think it's sort of along the lines of if some tiles were directly connected to a different city, it might have actually lost it. and you could somehow lose out on key city plots for a particular city. Fixed a bug where liberated city-states do not show their votes correctly in the Victory Progress UI screen. That's also been around for a very long time. Not exactly high on the list of things to fix. Fixed graphics bugs when the game was restarted too many times in a row. Ha!
That's very specific. Too many times in a row, huh?
Yeah. If you've been restarting constantly, there you go. Unless, of course, they actually meant the game itself. So you load it, you quit, you load it, you quit, you load it, you quit, versus in-game constantly pop out, go in, pop out, go in. And apparently the shortcuts created through the launcher now function correctly. Wow. A feature that they've been having for the launcher since, you know, day one finally works.
Yay.
Not that it really mattered. And then, of course, fixed a crash that happened when the AI lost its capital but still had units, so it's still alive.
So I guess that meant that you had complete kills, even if you didn't select it.
Yeah.
Apparently not, since it would crash you.
Yeah. Like, ha! Screw you! Take this! Take my land. Ha! I take your game.
Oh, oh. Take my love. Take my land, take me
Mackie,
where I
can stand. Mackie, where are
Mackie? I purposely
opened. You know, Dan, I was thinking the same thing.
Were you?
I purposely opened up the Firefly.
Yes, thank you, Medjin.
No problem.
I'll send you a gift basket.
So that was it. That was in the bug list. So it wasn't much, but apparently it fixed some stuff.
Oh, and don't forget tablet rotation, so all those people playing Civ 5 on their Microsoft Surface can...
Yeah, I think I might have just lost
Civ
5
even run on that.
All right, so to all three of you who are doing that, you can clap.
Go clap.
So yeah, so now your Civ 5 version should be 1.0.2.44. It was about a 13 megabyte download. Some people noticed some issues on the 2K forums. One person was like, what broke in this patch? First, you want to verify game cache. So in Steam, you go to library, you select properties from the game, then under local files and click on the verify integrity of game cache. Some people reported an issue with the Sarah DePazzi that they would get a dialogue that would say, oh, can't load that, can't load that. Apparently, if you go through all of the OK messages, the game does start OK. But reportedly, from the Civ community, Darren said, to fix this, enter the wonder_potsy directory, and for each of the four continents, make sure that any files that exist have the feature_prefix. Renaming fixes the problem.
But the problem is those files are never used by the game anymore. So to fix it properly, what you need to do is just delete all of that. Basically, if you've been running vanilla for a very long time and then, you know, upgraded and upgraded, some of these files still kick around, and there's basically just kind of accidentally looks up those. And if you've got cleaner install, you're not going to run into this because it won't try and load any of those files.
This hotfix was released for both Mac and Windows at the same time, and I had to laugh at Kill Me Please on CFC, which was, hey, are they aware of the auto-annexation bug? And I'm like, Three suggestions. First was from Anadist, which says, do not use the F keys. And I'm like, well, I had that issue, and I never used the F keys. Avatan said, I think that if you reload an earlier save, the auto-annexation stops. Yes, but JB said, what worked for me is view the tech tree and then returning. The city acquisition choices then appear along with any barbarian camp notices. And I believe that has, in fact, worked. And I had initially thought that when that happened that the game was actually bugging out, but I think that was actually correcting an issue. And the sooner you do that, the better, because there's nothing like going from, oh, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 happy to, you know, 20, 25 unhappy in just a few clicks. Even if you choose puppet, 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 it won't be as bad as annex, 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 but it will still be pretty bad, and then you will be crying sad face.
Mm. I think Dan covered all the other issues. Of course, people are still mad that multiplayer doesn't work. A bunch of other stuff still hasn't been fixed. I mean, this is just a tiny patch, and people were kind of a little mad that they didn't change a bunch of stuff.
You'd almost think they were busy working on something else right now.
Yeah, you think.
Yeah, I wonder what that could be.
Me too.
Oh, wait, I was segueing into something.
Yes,
oh,
you were. And I was helping you segue. And then you threw it off.
And then you talked about doing a segue, and then it just the wheels just kind of fell off. But
yeah,
that's what we do on this show. You're consistent.
They have announced a new expansion pack for Civilization V. Previous speculation was that it was called One World, but it is in fact called Brave New World. And there's been a huge info dump on all of the various Civ sites. Civ Fanatics, WePlayCiv, that German site that always seems to get the scoops. And it's exciting because, oh my god, new expansion. So let's see, I pulled it up. We've got information on new civilizations. There will be 9. The one that has been confirmed is Poland. And, yeah, get the giggling out now. Yes, you can play Civilization as Poland.
Without a mod.
Please send all hate mail, too. I think there's a few Polish fans. There might have been a few threads on the forums about,
yeah, why no Poland, why no Poland, why no Poland?
Yeah, just a few.
There's also speculation that Assyria is playable based on a single screenshot that also revealed that a siege tower is going to be a new unit, either their unique unit or one that's available to everyone. So
I don't think there was enough proof.
What's proof? We don't need proof for speculation, imagine. What are you talking about?
And, speculation is like the opposite of proof.
I just want to see if somebody can post the screenshot for the relief pitcher in yet another thread. It's been posted in so many threads now.
This is proof!
So many threads! Same screenshot.
So what we know so far about Poland is that their unique ability is solidarity. They receive a free social policy when they advance to each new era. So basically they get 6 oracles. That seems pretty good. The
6th one comes a little late, but sure.
The Winged Hussar is some kind of mounted unit. We don't know what it's a unique unit replacement for yet. And there's speculation that it forces other units to withdraw. But that speculation seems to be based on translation from German.
It's also the Polish article.
And they have a stable replacement called the Stanznia Kazga. Oh, man, some of those things aren't even letters.
Yes, they are.
Please send all hate mail, too.
And more guests at the Polycast.
Plus 1 gold in food on pastures, which seems to imply that Polish like to eat horses.
I'm not sure that would imply it, but...
You get +1 food on horse pastures.
What's not to like about eating horses? I don't understand.
You get +1 food on horse pastures at fertilizers already, so
yeah.
Do horses count as fertilizer?
I think
they should be used in that capacity. This just seems decent. It's not going to be like uber cost or something, but you know, you could do worse.
I don't know. The people are worried about the free social policy for each era.
That could be a little overpowered.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, social policies now appear to no longer be directly tied into the cultural victory condition. So I think balance considerations for social policies might work out a little differently in this new one. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. So that's civilizations. There are going to be 9 in the expansion. Poland and possibly Assyria are the only ones we know about so far.
Briefly, as for the free social policy when you advance into a new era, I think an associated question with that is, when you advance into the new era, does that mean you're now at the higher tier to get the next social policy? So, in other words, hey, I'm 5 turns away from my next social policy. Oh, no, wait, guess what? I'm going to advance to the medieval era next turn. Hey, look at that. Now I have another social policy in 4 turns.
Well, I think yeah. It just gives you one at each era switch, regardless.
Yeah, it's a question of, you know, is it going to cost you? As in, you get the free social policy, but it bumps up your cost for the next one. Or is it just like Oracle-style free, and you basically get, what, classical, medieval, renaissance, industrial, modern, atomic, info era? So, 7.
If it costs you, it'll be stupid. Like, it'll be extremely weak. But if it doesn't, then it's going to be extremely strong.
No, actually, I don't think it would be extremely weak, because think about going into the Renaissance era, getting an instant social policy that you can then use on rationalism to open it up.
I guess.
Rather than waiting.
I guess.
getting that policy one turn before you go in and having to use somewhere else.
Or getting your policy one turn, you know, you're getting the policy just before the switch, and then the next turn you get into the next area and you get another policy. So it depends on how they balanced it.
Since we're on the topic of social policies, they've also announced there are two new trees in social policies, exploration and aesthetics. We know nothing about them, just that they exist.
Yeah.
Okay. Can we guess what those things are?
Sure.
I bet you one's about exploring.
Aesthetics, you mean, right? Aesthetics is about exploring, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you need to explore your aesthetics. You need to be able to find things so that you can create things yourself. You need that creative inspiration, of course.
Aesthetics obviously means that your units can get, like, manicures and pedicures now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Combat bonus.
Aesthetics.
I'll bet the aesthetics has to do with the change to the great artist.
Nah.
And archaeology, that whole can of worms. So archaeology is a thing now, and we don't know much about it, but there's an aesthetics tree, and there are archaeologist units, and you can create great works, so that probably all ties in together in ways that we can only speculate about.
Hey, that sounds like real life.
You know, exploration could tie in with the archaeologists.
You're right, and I think exploration might get some of those naval ones from commerce, and commerce will be more focused on the new trade route mechanic. So everything ties into everything else. There's also new trade routes in this game. International trade routes. Apparently they're separated out into land and sea routes, and we have confirmation that at the beginning of the game you have one of each for each city, but that actually, we don't know if this is per city, do we?
No, I don't think
it might be for your whole empire.
Yeah, I don't think anybody confirmed or denied that.
But they're going old school on it, back to Civ 2 style, where you have to actually establish these things with units, some sort of caravan units, that are apparently vulnerable to barbarians because they have no sight radius.
Well, and they're civilians, one would guess.
Yeah. Right.
Combat strength 40.
Yeah.
No. One thing, speaking of old school, they better not actually be bringing back technology trading. There's some speculation that that's going to happen, and that's going in the wrong direction. So let's not see that, please.
Yeah.
Fortunately, was based on an offhand comment from someone being interviewed, a single sentence, and it doesn't look like. I mean, we really don't have any confirmation on that, but.
Yeah. Well, when that single person is the. Producer.
Yeah. It is quoted as Ben is Shirk, so.
Although people have questioned it in the various threads, people are like, yes, tech trading is here because what was said specifically was also the way that it ties into the New World Congress, which again ties us up to other subtopics, to the way that you're going to have to horse trading in terms of buying and selling of tech with other civilizations, quote from Dennis Shirk, or at least out of context quote. Some people have suggested that it might just be a slip-up, and what he was talking about is something else in relation to the New World Congress, not necessarily that when the New World Congress pops up, you get to tech trade.
So it may be something like you can arrange to buy beakers for gold from other civs or something along those lines.
Well, that's what it sounded more like to me, the few things I've read about it with the trade routes and stuff, of having science transfer across trade routes.
Yeah, that was also mentioned, that if you're trading with someone who's more technologically advanced, then you can get research that way somehow.
Yeah, maybe that's part of it then. Maybe that's where the slip-up comes. Maybe your trade routes give you money. According to the CFC list, you can get gold, science, religion, or tourism through the international trade routes. Maybe the science part is part of the New World Congress, as in you don't get science until the New World Congress kicks in and then you make some sort of agreement, and then maybe that's what he was talking about.
They've also brought back another thing from the Civ 2 days, where you can trade food between your cities, which I think has been kind of a gaping hole in the civilization experience, because you really can settle places that aren't able to produce enough food for their population if you ship food to them. But you've never been able to do that in Civ since Civilization 2. But apparently they're bringing it back. If you've got a granary, you can transfer food from one city to another with trade routes. And as you mentioned, production also, if you've got workshops.
Yeah, that sounds fine. Because apparently in the New World Congress, because this is all tied together, apparently in the New World Congress, they can sanction rogue nations economically. So maybe part of that is to shut off trade routes to specific civs, so then you have all these trade routes hanging around. What are you going to do with them? Might as well use them internally. Otherwise, it would, like, horribly shut somebody down if you could just do one vote and basically, hey, you know this whole mechanic? Yeah, no, you can't use that.
Through the World Congress, you could also limit resource usage, the use of nuclear weapons, and designating host cities for the World Games, whatever in the heck that.
And the World's Fair.
Ah, yes, and the World's Fair.
World Congress, of course, is unlocked by the first person to meet all of the civs on the map. When you have researched or built the reviews are not clear on this, the printing press, sorry, reading stuff inside parentheses. Printing press is a technology, I'm pretty sure, as much as the printing press, the original one, was a big leap forward, I'm pretty sure it wasn't a diplomacy thing, like, we built a printing press and now, haha, we control everything because we're the only ones who can write things out in mass quantities. So I'm pretty sure they're related to the tech itself, not actually building a printing press.
Yeah.
Apparently, according to the reviews and stuff, that you can get a bonus for being the host of the World Congress.
What is the bonus? Any idea on that? Any speculation on that so far?
I believe it has to do with the proposals. It says that the Congress can have two proposals that will be voted on, and you are notified of what they are beforehand, and apparently you can coerce or bribe people into voting your way with this advance notice. I'm happy that the World's Fair is in Civ now, because I live two blocks from the Space Needle.
Of course, that brings us back to the worldwide projects. I mean, World's Fair and World Games, but the question is, how do you build them? Is it just, we make a vote and these things happen? And then what do you get out of them? What are you going to get out of the World's Fair? What are you going to get out of the World Games?
Get the Space Needle.
No, we need the wonder the Motherland calls.
Apparently it's in.
I'm saying.
Yeah.
It just seems like an interesting way to name something.
I'm sure it sounds better in Russian.
Yeah.
It does not translate well.
It's an awesome statue.
It sounds like an ability or like a Civ's unique ability as opposed to a wonder when translated to English like this.
It's an enormous statue of a woman brandishing a sword and screaming.
And pointing at a direction.
I have absolutely no problem with it being a wonder. It just, I don't know.
Yeah.
French translations are always interesting.
So we know 6 of the 8 new wonders. The Parthenon, one of the classical wonders of the world, kind of missing so far. The Uffizi Museum, which I looked it up. It's in Italy. It's an art museum. The Globe Theater, of course, the famous London theater where Shakespeare's plays were performed.
Yeah, we last saw the Globe Theater represented in Civilization 4, if I recall correctly. Wasn't that
a national wonder that anybody could build and everybody
makes no sense. And Oxford University in this one. There's only one Oxford University. Why couldn't they just call it the National Science Institute or something? And then
everybody's
in their flavor text had mentioned that, like, you know, examples like DARPA or the Royal Society or, you know, it just makes me so mad.
Must go to Oxford. That's your national wonder. I don't care what country you're from. It's Oxford.
Yeah.
Yep.
Broadway, which probably ties into the new tourism mechanic. The Motherland Calls, which we've already mentioned, and Borobudur, I think I'm saying that right. I'm probably not saying that right, which was a Buddhist temple in Indonesia, which I am guessing, this is not confirmed, but I'm guessing it has to do with the new archaeologist mechanic, because it was lost for centuries. It was buried under volcanic ash and reclaimed by the jungle. And then when the Dutch controlled that part of Indonesia, they unearthed it.
Hmm.
Yeah. The more you know.
I do wonder what some of the effects of these others will be.
Yeah. Like, what's going to be the effect of the giant statue?
Yeah. That one's probably military related. It's a monument to the defense of Stalingrad.
Mm. Okay.
Maybe it teleports all your troops back home.
Yeah.
That's extra balance.
Yeah.
Unit's about to die. Nope.
Apparently the Protoss are playing
Folk theater equals happiness again, or are we not going to do that this time?
Well, I mean, you do have tourism and culture and stuff, so...
Yeah, you could go a lot of ways with it. That's true.
Yeah, I would guess that enough of these are related to the new mechanics.
Right. With the tourism thing, they've mentioned creating great arts, great works of art or something, whatever. Great somethings that you can put in your cities, and apparently some wonders and buildings have slots for them, and combining them, like, increases their effect. So the museum ones probably have tie into that mechanic. Like, the Uffizi Museum has slots for great paintings, and the Globe Theater has slots for great plays, or I don't know. I'm just...
And Broadway's probably for musical stuff.
I have an idea. The Parthenon, you get the luck favor of the Greek gods, right? So basically that makes all of your combat rolls max damage no matter what. That's the effect of the Parthenon. Write it down. That's definitely going to happen.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Since it's a classical era wonder, I'm going to guess that the effect is I don't build it because I play on too high a difficulty level.
Yeah,
no way. Max luck and rolls. Even better, if the AI gets it, then it always does max damage on every attack to you. Like, yeah. Not like 10 hit points, but whatever the unit attacking you could possibly do, it does max damage always.
Yeah. I guess
you dance your favorite wonder.
Yeah, we should tie in the fact that tourism was first created by great artists, musicians, and writers. So it sounds like the great artist now has a couple more friends, the musician and the writer, of course. And that's where the museum, theater, and Broadway discussion was coming from, because I don't think we actually mentioned that they were adding musicians and writers before we talked about it.
Are musicians and writers not artists in some capacity?
I think they're distinguishing it now as artists being like painters and sculptors, musicians,
well,
for music
thing.
And writers for writing, you know.
Whatever.
I guess that just means that that's two more great people that I'll just never build, because outside of scientists and the occasional engineer, there's no need for
Hey, you don't know that. Maybe this new mechanic's going to be so friggin' broken that you'll want to go that route because it's so strong.
Well, actually, you'll have to if you want to win a... culture victory, because that's completely reworked. It has to do with tourism, and it's also not very well explained in what's
assuming
the
gym
so
goes for a cultural victory now.
Yeah. Yeah. Something about spreading your culture to the whole world.
Yeah, and it involves trade routes and tourism, and once you have dominated the culture of every other civilization in the game, then you win
sounds
a culture
like
victory.
Sounds like you would use guns for that, actually. Spreading your culture, dominating other people.
It's basically taking the very, very poor and very boring and crappy culture victory game from Vanilla and Gods and Kings and turning it into something that you do stuff with rather than sit there and hit enter constantly.
Right. You have to establish trade routes and have these great artists, musicians, and writers create the great masterpiece. Oh, masterpieces. That's the word they're using for it, which are then placed in slots created in cultural buildings. And then tourism, archaeologists investigating former battlegrounds, finding artifacts which can be turned into great works for your museums. So apparently there's a whole bunch of ways to generate tourism, and then tourism influences your cultural pressure on opponent civs, and if you do a whole bunch of that, you can win a culture victory. And that's pretty much all we know about how it works.
Well, one of these other lines says culture pressure, i.e. tourism or whatever, can be used to force or persuade another player to change to your ideology.
And which we haven't mentioned yet.
Yeah. But apparently you can screw somebody over and say, ha, you thought you were that, now you must follow me.
So the ideologies are familiar. They are the
can't
industrial
can't you do the same
era.
Thing by just taking them over?
Yeah, I'm not sure that quite counts.
The ideologies are the familiar industrial era social policies. Autocracy, freedom, and order are the three main ideologies, and apparently they're getting significantly reworked. There are diplomatic benefits and penalties for those. Actually, that's already in the game. But they now are divided into tenets within the ideologies, and you must unlock these tenets before you can unlock later levels of them.
Basically, they're not like social policies where you have a tree and you just dig into the tree. In this case, you have level 1 tenets, then you have to take some of those before you can get level 2s and then get level 3s. So you kind of build up your ideology over time. And I think it was mentioned somewhere else that there's a plethora of tenets. I think it was in one of the articles that unlike social policies where, you know, if two groups go tradition, they all have the exact same social policies, that you might not have the same tenets, even if you're in the same group.
So the way I imagine it is that is they're kind of going to divide the modern methods of managing nation states into these three categories, with autocracy being like dictatorships and fascism and that sort of thing, police states, freedom being democracy, republics, parliamentary rule, and order being communism and planned economies and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And then they will all fight.
Of all of the sources of information other than official ones, the most comprehensive I've come across is the interview with both Dennis Shirk, senior producer of Civ 5, as well as Ed Beach, who is the designer for Brave New World and was also the designer for Gods and Kings. Quite a bit of information buried in this interview. With regards to tourism, that it's an actual yield. When archaeology comes online, you're going to be running around on a second phase of exploration and discovery, because now there are these digs around the world that are actual reflections of stuff that happened earlier in the game. And I'm not just saying stuff to paraphrase. No, that's the actual word Dennis Shirk uses. Stuff.
There is stuff and things.
For example, where a battle might have taken place, where a barbarian camp was, you can extract artifacts from these sites and also put them into your museums. If you have open borders with another civilization, that creates a boost for your tourism. And, oh, if you have trade routes to those other civilizations, hey, more tie-in to mechanics, that also boosts your tourism. Ed Beach adds, with regards to archaeology, that they're writing data onto the map, storing that information, and so at some point, whenever the first civilization discovers archaeology, at that point in time, we do sort of a lockdown where all of these were different, and they call them antiquity sites. They're where they keep track of, where other civilizations were involved, whether it was a battle, an ancient ruin that was undiscovered, or a barbarian camp was destroyed, so that once an archaeologist gets there, he's going to extract them. And Dennis Shirk calls it a really interesting mini-game that kind of happened into being that our community gameplay testers really started to enjoy. But Ed does add that not every single ancient battle turns into an archaeology site, and we do try to keep a relatively even distribution across the map. So I guess we're not going to have a whole bunch of icon spam of antiquity sites then.
Yeah, if you've been endowed by five or six civs, you're not going to have, you know, every single tile around your capital covered with antiquity sites.
Antiquity farming.
And if it's an important part of the cultural victory, someone going for cultural victory might, like, try to get people to declare war on them so that they can have battle sites within their borders.
Yeah, possible. Or, you know, maybe you go steal somebody's antiquity sites. Go grave robbing.
Ooh. Oh?
They've got quotes from Indiana Jones in the game, so.
Yeah.
With trade routes, Ed Beach does confirm that by the end of the game, you usually have 7 or 8 trade routes at least. With regards to just the whole approach to this expansion in general, in case you haven't been able to figure it out yet, from what we've been describing all this time, Dennis Shirk says, and this was in an interview with Polygon, we do a tremendous amount in response to community feedback, only because once the game is out, especially a game with as many layers and the complexity of Civilization, it becomes very apparent where the weaknesses are in a game. We wanted to kind of build on Gods and Kings and focus in on new game systems to make the modern age, the industrial age and on, as exciting as possible. Our real goal was to make the second half just as exciting as the first half of the game, quote unquote. They want to try to avoid the end turn.
Yeah.
Why am I still here? End turn.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with the focus being both diplomacy, the diplomatic victory, and the cultural victory, the two worst considered victories out of 4, given that, not really that surprising they're going on it. Now, I know there's been a lot of people have been like, why isn't this more war-focused? Like, we need more units. We need more this. Why are you doing this?
I read that, too.
Why are you doing on this the not-war side? We need more war. Guess what? Already a ton of crap like that in the game. And that's why most people have considered it a war game, not necessarily a civilization game. So it's not a bad thing if they boost up the not war side for once.
Yeah.
two last changes. They're adding two scenarios, and somebody mentions, because this is going to be quite a shock to people, that you no longer get gold from coast or river tiles.
And that kind of ties in with the idea of those trade routes. I mean, if you only have 7 or 8, according to that interview, and there's no gold in the coast or river tiles anymore, you're probably going to really want to protect those trade routes, because they will probably be your main source of gold.
The reason that previous titles in the Civilization series have given you money for rivers and coast is because historically those have been the avenues of trade. Before the invention of the internal combustion engine, you could always move goods further and faster by boat than you could over land.
Well, of course.
So trade flowed along the rivers and along the coastlines, and human civilization went to water and stayed there. But if they're completely revamping how trade works, then they no longer have to abstract it out that way by just, oh, you're on a river. Here's some extra money because you're probably engaging in trade. Now they've got a separate system for that.
Okay, then how are you going to have gold in the early game when you've only got one city?
Well,
and you haven't met anybody.
The first caravan comes at animal husbandry, so that's pretty straightforward. And cargo ships come at sailing. So I would think that city-states could also be used for trade routes. So unless you're completely and utterly and totally alone where there's not even a city-state, you should be able to find money through trade routes.
And, you know, maybe we'll just have to suck it up and actually build our settlers instead of buying them every time we have 500 gold.
Yeah, and maybe going to commerce for the market and settling closer to luxury tiles so you can improve them rather than directly on them.
So that you get the happiness immediately, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there might be some changes to how people play in the early game.
So the scenarios being added are the American Civil War, which is pretty straightforward. You can play as either the Union or the Confederates. And fight it apparently is focused on the eastern seaboard portion of the conflict rather than the limited fighting that took place on the interior of the continent.
Yeah, no invading Canada this time, okay?
Plus one.
And the other one is the Scramble for Africa, which I'm a little nervous about because I think they're treading in dangerous waters from a cultural sensitivity standpoint.
Not really. It's historical, it happened.
Right, but there's a real danger of minimizing the experience of the Africans. I mean, if it's a game to get resources for Europe, what I'm envisioning is the European powers that you're playing as are settling on this randomized African continent and trying to get resources and find these new natural wonders, which are probably going to be things like Mount Kilimanjaro and Victoria Falls. And you get victory points for doing these things. But I think it can kind of erase the fact that this was one of the most brutal periods of imperialism. I mean, there were no uninhabited lands in sub-Saharan Africa. There were lands that were inhabited by people who could offer some resistance to European imperialism and lands inhabited by people who could offer no resistance.
Yeah, that's no different than showing up on North America or South America or Central America or Asia or Middle East or, you know, everywhere else it happened.
Right. I think it's a matter of presentation for this one because, I don't know, I'm nervous about the way they might present it when, what's his name, you know how William Morgan Shepherd does the introduction whenever you start a game, the father narrator guy?
Yep.
How that is worded can make a really big difference to whether it's a blatantly Eurocentric view of the scramble for Africa or if it's a more nuanced approach that acknowledges the brutality of this period of history.
They're usually pretty good at dodging.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who know a lot about history in their work at Firaxis, obviously. I mean, they've been making this game. And this game has been a gateway for a lot of people to become interested in history and learn a lot about history. And this is a part of history that is often kind of Eurocentric. Like, they make frequent references to the Dark Continent in all of these releases that I'm seeing. And
it's a bit of an eyebrow raiser, yes.
Yes, it is. And the thing about it is, you know, the explanation for that is, you know, oh, it's not a racial thing. What they mean is that term was coined during this period because the interior of the African continent was unknown at that time because before steamships allowed them to sail up the navigable rivers, they couldn't get into the interior of the continent because horses tend to die in Africa. There's this disease that kills horses, along with malaria that kills everybody. But the thing about that is the continent was not unknown to the people who lived there.
Well, of course not.
So the whole concept of the Dark Continent is viewing history only from the European perspective.
Yeah. This isn't politicraft.
Yeah.
Well, see how they treat it. I mean, it...
Apartheid is in living memory, and it's a direct result of the Dutch colonization of South Africa. That's why I think this is kind of risky from a cultural sensitivity standpoint, because you could make an argument that the Dutch won the scramble for Africa.
I wonder if it's more just the way that they've phrased it. I read the description of what they called Scramble for Africa, and I'm wondering if it's really doing it justice or, in fact, doing it a disservice. Because the way it is phrased, it's reasonable to start questioning how is it that they are going to treat it. But like Majin said, given how they've treated it in similar circumstances otherwise, like look at like Civilization IV colonization, I just kind of look at it as kind of, oh, so this scenario within Civilization V is going to kind of be that, only for the African continent, which we really haven't seen before. I mean, I'm not a scenario player, I'll give you that, but unless my memory is off completely, we've never seen a scenario like this before. So I think part of that is, well, they haven't done something like this before, so how are they going to treat it? So I think it's hopeful and reasonable to conclude that they are going to treat it with the sensitivity that it deserves, but at the same time, yeah, the description of it and some of the word choices does leave it to speculate. And I mean, who knows actually who wrote that description, to be honest.
One thing I think we can probably take out of that scenario is one of the new civs is probably one of the African civs.
Well, some people are saying that. That's not always the case, that new civs go into new scenarios. Though people have been trying to use that byline to ensure that there's certain civs going to show up because the scenario is there. But yeah, apparently it's a big scenario with a large choice of available civilizations, which likely means it's not just playable as the Europeans. There's probably other people you can play as or other groups, which also means that it can't be Euro-focused, as in just walk in and take it, everything else, because if there's AI nations that are Africans, or if you can play one of the African groups, then it's likely definitely not Euro-focused.
Well, one of the only successes for Africans during this period of history was the Ethiopians. They pushed the Italians out of their territory, and the Ethiopians are already in the game. So yep. I imagine that they will be one of the forces, and probably also the Zulu will make an appearance, because that the whole Zulu versus the British is kind of a iconographic part of the history of that part of the world in that time period.
You hear that, listeners? Shaka is coming back. You thought you were done with him. You thought it was over, but it's not over. Shaka's going to be in a Civ game again.
I'm actually kind of impressed how long we went without mentioning the Zulu at all, to be honest.
Well, that's what I was getting at. I just didn't want to specify, you know.
Indeed.
No Shaka for you.
Actually, what I took more from the description of the Scramble for Africa, so you can imagine a eyebrow raised like Mr. Spock from Star Trek. Fascinating, Captain. Dynamically generated continent each time you play.
Well, I'm sure it's the interior. They can't really dynamically generate the outside part.
Yes.
Well, actually, I guess they could, because they did into the Renaissance, they had both a historical map and a completely random map.
This three-island mass is Africa, quote-unquote.
The interior of Africa is randomly generated. It probably just means that they move things around on the inside, so that I think it even said in one of the interviews, so that you can't just memorize exactly where all the natural wonders are, all the other stuff is, and then just go there. So it's one of those styles of scenarios that basically they're aiming for replayability, which means that it's not going to be just a, how do I win this easily? Whereas I'm figuring that the American Civil War is just going to be one of those that you play a couple times, and then they're like, okay, that's fun. Done.
More a reenactment style, where troops are already on the map, arrayed the way they were historically. kind of thing. I remember, I'm surprised there's still no World War II scenario for Civ 5, but that's how the World War II scenarios in the previous games always were. Like, the Japanese were poised to strike Pearl Harbor with a fleet of aircraft carriers, etc.
Some other points for Brave New World, just going back over some of the game features that I don't believe had been said already. With regards to the World Congress, Founding Civ, yes, becomes the host of the World Congress with some bonuses. So I guess we'll have to see what those bonuses actually are. City-states will send delegates to the World Congress. So it'll be interesting to see how that works with, you know, allying city-states and what kind of advantage that might be able to give you. Trade routes. The greater the distance, the better the rewards. And given that they're also vulnerable to attack, seeing as how, assuming that, you know, that your route isn't destroyed, I guess that comes with the, you know, with the greater risk potentially comes the greater reward. Ideologies talked about how that there is a, I think there's a way that you can force people to, through your cultural influence, to get them to switch to your ideology. You can change that otherwise, although at least as summarized in the CFC thread, what we know about Brave New World, this is not generally advised. And my favorite actually from that post was under changes from Civ 5, we already talked about no gold and coast and river tiles. The line, some civs have been changed. Mm. And you could read that. So guess what, folks? When Brave New World comes out, no more Aztecs. Yeah, they're gone.
Yeah, they've been changed.
Sorry about that.
They've been changed to non-existing.
Wow. Yeah, we took all their gold and ran away.
Yeah, sorry. Only one troll civ allowed per expansion. And you had your vanilla time.
That's right.
No, I think people have been speculating that, like, France might get changed because France is supposed to be a tourist attraction and big culture power. There's a constant whining about getting India and America unique abilities changed, though I doubt either of those are going to happen unless there's, like, a key mechanic that would change. Because that's kind of what happens with Gods and Kings. There was mechanic changes, and therefore that made certain civs like the Songhai and just not useful. So some civs have been changed, probably just looks at certain civs. And it's probably most of those civs that get, like, some crazy amount of culture or culture buildings or all the other stuff. Since the culture game has changed, some of them may just no longer get what they were getting before and have something new instead.
It also changed trade routes, so the Arabs are due for a change. I bet their mechanic won't even make sense in the new expansion.
Stuff like that, yeah.
Dutch UA could have changed, too.
Yep. Speculation on that. Speculation. You can pretty much speculate for every single civ. Like, some people are even saying, oh, yeah, the English should change, too. Because, you know, their unique ability sucks. Just because you don't like a specific unique ability doesn't necessarily mean it's going to get changed. Some things actually work, even if you don't know how to use it.
And if you want it changed even before Brave New World comes out, then mod it.
Yeah.
That's like one of the default, that's like the two default answers to Civ. It depends, and you can mod it.
Yeah.
That pretty well covers, you know, the entire show.
Except for graphics, apparently. Can't put her.
Well, there are always exceptions. You have to read the fine print.
For the question in the chat, no specific release date has been given, although if you look at the Firaxis website, December 31st, 2013.
Interesting. After Christmas?
Yep.
Not sure why. Okay.
You know that's just a troll number.
Yeah, it has to be.
Well, especially since they did say summer in their main release.
December 31st is summer in the Southern Hemisphere.
There you go.
There you go.
Either way, Firaxis, I applaud your trolling efforts. Yeah.
We're going to release this at the worst possible time, after everybody's already bought everything, have no money, and are looking around going, why would I want to buy your stuff now?
Recorded for episode 166 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian team, Majin, and Flower Fackle. I think this conversation was starting to run away with us.
Oh, wow. Thanks for the segue.
Hey, they still make those?
So on the forums, there was a topic posted with the question of how bad can a civ run away? And Makaz asks,
I mean, every game got one or two civs running away in size, science, or otherwise. But what is the worst you have ever faced as such? In a recent game, I received a notification that Korea had completed the Manhattan Project in 1640 on standard speed. Has anybody else noticed some terrible threatening runaway as such?
I gotta say, the definition of runaway seems to be a little off. If you have a civ building the Manhattan Project in 1640 AD, standard speed, as in turn 220-ish, you're probably a little behind. as in, the A is being slow about it.
Well, what difficulty is he playing on? You know, that's the big question.
Well, apparently Emperor, but even still, turn 220 at Emperor.
Oh, on Emperor, that's not really runaway.
Yeah, that's about right. I mean, runaway is where I think somebody else down here posted something. Oh, for vanilla, one continent for an AI, blah, blah, blah. Alex posted a UN countdown at, and then Wynn was at 212. That is a runaway.
Yes.
Yeah, the only time I tend to have problems with a runaway AI that I can't control but doesn't just steamroll me is when it's like a continent-style map, something like that. And I have the misfortune of having to deal with my interior neighbors and can't focus on putting a fleet together to go bother the guy.
Yeah, when they're off on another continent left to their own devices because they had very little competition or very poor competition. So in other words, either they were able to steamroll relatively quickly and then expand out, or for some reason they were able to take over a couple of other or more other already developed AI, and then it's there sitting there waiting for you to catch up and do the same on your continent. Yeah, that's what to me lends itself to runaway AI potential, and not just in Civ 5.
Yeah, you run into like Alexander, it's like 1200 or 1300 AD. He has 40% of the world's land, and he's the only thing left alive on his continent. That's that kind of stuff is runaway.
Looking at this, you know, random picture that was attached, that somebody entered the atomic era about turn 220. Yeah, well, that's not a runaway. And the fact that number one person in power is the player.
Right.
I'm sorry, that's a solution right there.
Yeah, that's not considered a runaway.
Well, maybe you are at the runaway.
Yeah, like you beat the runaway. Yeah. Completing Apollo before turn 200, that would probably be a bit of a runaway. Or at least the start of one, considering that if they build the Apollo, they don't necessarily go for the spaceship tax.
Yeah, right. Runaways tend to be centered more on the size of their empire than their speed for most of the game. And then right at the end, because they have so many cities and they finally built some things in them, then they tend to shoot forward right at the end. But for the most part, I don't know if their tech position is the best metric of a runaway as compared to their size and building potential.
Well, it is in the fact that they'll have better weaponry and better buildings and better everything else.
I guess, but they're so stupid. So if you can come up with a comparable force or even sort of match their tech, you can still kill them.
To a point. Frigate fleets are a great equalizer for a long time, but the moment somebody has air power, if they're that far ahead, you might as well just walk away.
That's true. I guess my point is I would rather use that kind of equalizer. You know, there's probably going to be a window for something like that, rather than try and take on somebody who has their entire continent with frigates, because it just slows the game a lot.
Oh, yeah. Don't let the AI run away in the first place. If you see an AI start to crush everybody around them, you might want to do something about that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, how bad can a civ run away? I don't know. How bad do you want it to run away?
True for human players, too, by the way. If you're in a competitive multiplayer game and someone's stomping on his neighbors, it should be worth some attention.
I liked Zizima's post in this thread. There really is no reason to be so competitive about whose runaway is better than whose. My runaway can beat up your runaway.
Yeah, I definitely laughed when I first read that, because the thread did start sort of taking that tone.
Nuh-uh, man, my runaway's worse.
And we had mentioned with regards to the Small Civilization 5 patch that it was released for both Mac and PC at the same time. Speaking of which, Brave New World is to be released on the Mac concurrently with the PC version. And so this was reported on TUAW.com. And apparently they also report, and other places have reported as well, that the suggested retail price of this expansion is $29.99, which I believe was the same suggested retail price for Gods and Kings.
I love how they suggest a retail price, and it's still the same. This is what we suggest you sell it for. No, wait. This is what we're telling you you're selling it for.
Apparently, they had an interview with Aspyr Media, which has been doing the Mac ports for Civilization V to date, so Civ 5 Vanilla, as well as Gods and Kings, that they apparently teased the Brave New World expansion in January, and I checked out that article from the 31st of January, where Aspyr's Vice President of Publishing, Elizabeth Howard, promised more content for Civ 5. But the article also talked about buggy ports of PC games on the Mac being a big problem, and the other complaint is being delays, where games on the Mac often come out months or even years after their PC and console releases, that Aspyr was working hard as possible to juggle licensing partnerships, engineers, code bases, and platforms to try and get these games out as close as possible to the PC release. And for a little while, apparently Aspyr was also doing the PC version of Brave New World, according to some. There was no mention of Firaxis at all. Mm-hmm. IGN, we're looking at you. But they did correct that. And there's even a note I saw that said that, kind of like a mea culpa, and they had corrected the article, but I'm not sure.
What about the Linux version?
That's even funnier than the Mac version.
Yeah.
Historically, you could run things sooner because you would just use the Windows emulation.
Yeah.
Well, you could do that on Mac, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pretty much. It's not as well supported, is my understanding.
Calling today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
The day that we are recording this, there is going to be the first playable demo showing of Civilization V Brave New World from PAX East. I love how from their blog, it's like, join the Facebook live stream event, and then you go there, and it says, please visit us on Twitch.
Yeah.
God, just send me to Twitch, please. They said, you know, what is in the Firaxis DNA, and how do they make incredible strategy games? Come find out. You won't want to miss this panel, so be sure to come early to secure your seat. And, of course, that's more targeted to actually being there in person, obviously.
Yeah, because, you know, it's not like they're going to shortlist the chat for being able to watch it on Twitch.
So whatever information is disclosed there, we will cover on the next episode of Polycast. Just like they announced this expansion, not during a recording week. I really wish they would coordinate with us a little better.
Very annoying.
It is.
The forums should blow up with all sorts of bad speculation and hate.
Blow up again with more bad speculation and more hate, imagine. You have to be specific.
Yeah, I gotta say, when something's announced and they just do broad strokes saying this is where we're going, seriously, do not suggest changes. Do not express hate. You know nothing. You don't even know what the broad strokes mean. And you're already suggesting changes to those things. I'm looking at you, stupid troll thread.
You can't know me.
We don't know what we don't know.
Yeah. So, Mr. Gripes with Brave New World thread. Yeah. Suck it up and wait.
Why don't you just go ahead and give it a bad review?
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
Or a good review.
Apparently you can give it good reviews, so why not bad ones, too?
Yeah.
Flip a coin, and then you decide a number between 1 and 10 based on your coin flip. Makes perfect sense.
At PAX 2010, I waited 4 hours to play Civilization V for 15 minutes.
I don't know. That seems kind of a waste of time.
A little bit.
15 minutes per, not 4 hours. Oh, troll face.
Gonzo1332 gives a Brave New World 10 out of 10.
Oh.
Hey, all right. So, look at that. We're watching community reviews, too.
I give it a 7.12697 out of 10.
Oh, you should have said I give it like a 3.14. Mm.
Dan, I was thinking the same thing.
That's the second time. Mmm, pie.
No.
Oh, that's right. We're talking about Phil here, so you probably give it a 6.66 out of 10, right?
Well, you can keep going with that, but yes, the 6.66 is rounded perfectly.
So, speaking about rounding this up, this has been Polycast episode 169, rather precise number even. There's other words that probably should be said right about now, but... Well, this has been Magin with Dan Q.
A whole new world.
The B&T.
Come on, establish a trade route with me. It'll be fun.
And our guests for today, Monthar.
Howdy.
And Izzy.
Whatever happens, we have got the Maxim gun and they have not.
Record date, March 23rd, 2013. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.